Hello, everyone in broadband land, and welcome to another episode of The Broadband Bunch. I'm your host, Brad Hine, and today we are coming to you live, well, not live, actually on site, recorded still, from Fort Lauderdale. We are at the UTC annual conference here, and a great anniversary, too. It's the 75th anniversary, so there's been lots of celebrating here for the organization. With me today, I have Mark Ponton. Mark, you want to tell us your title in your company?
Yes. Mark Ponton. I'm the Director of Fiber and Broadband Services for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative in Virginia.
Excellent. Excellent. So this isn't your first time to UTC, is it?
No, it's not. I've been attending for a few years, and so it's always good to be able to come out and meet others and be able to be part of the show and sometimes do some presentations, and other times, like this year, I got to be an observer, so it's a good opportunity.
That's nice. You got to take a little bit of a break and
yes.
Walk around. Yeah, okay. So tell us a little bit about what your focus is now that you're not on stage and speaking this year. You know, what were some of your focuses coming into the conference?
Things that I was focused on is just checking on all the vendors, listening into some of the presentations that are pertinent to what we're doing, some that were of interest, you know, like of how much fiber is enough, or how much is too much?
Gotcha.
Cost of fiber. There's some good presentations on that, some good folks that are doing things of that sort. Design services, we have them. We have our own designers, but we're looking at even further outside design services to be able to keep up with the demand, and also vendors that can provide materials for us. That's a big challenge in today's world.
Absolutely. So, and obviously with what happened in the last 3 years, there is a demand trying to get materials and services and, like you said, price them properly. I feel like it's been changing a bunch over the last 3 years.
It has.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got involved with your REC and kind of where you started in this business. I know you started an electric co-op, but how did that evolve into your current role?
Sure. I started with Rappahannock Electric in 1997. I had been attending ECPI and was working on an electronics degree. Prior to that, I had no utility experience. I actually worked for a vending and wholesale foods company. So during that time, I decided it might be good to do something different. So I ended up going to college, getting a degree, continuing on beyond that and getting a bachelor's degree in leadership and management. So I started at Rappahannock Electric and in the telecom department. So that has worked out extremely well for me. I stayed there from 1997 until just a couple of years ago when we started delving further into the broadband environment and the fiber deployment. And where it all really started from the fiber side was for a utility network to be able to connect all of our substations and our offices and our tower sites. And it's expanded from there into some ISPs and to other service areas.
So you said a couple of years ago. So during the pandemic, you switched your role in the
yes.
company?
Yeah, that's not the best time to switch roles, but
trial by fire.
Trial by
say.
Fire, that's for sure. But that was when things were really getting kicked off. We had started some of the fiber utility network, or the FUN project, as we call it, at Rappahannock Electric pre-COVID.
Okay.
And then during COVID, it really slowed down. But then when all of the grant monies started coming about with the FCC, the RDOF, and then the Virginia telecommunications infrastructure money that came about, that really gave a drive to get the fiber projects back up to speed and underway. So, yes, right in the midst of COVID is when all of that started happening. We looked at going into being an ISP ourselves. We applied for the RDOF auction and ultimately decided to build our fiber backbone and partner with ISPs to be able to provide to our membership.
So your model is OAN, Open Access
That's
Network,
right.
then. So how did you decide to do that instead of being your traditional ISP? Was there a lot of thought behind that? That was your quickest way into the market. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, we're an electric cooperative. That's our focus. And there's a lot of learning curve into getting into the broadband services and a lot of other expertise that we didn't have necessarily in-house. Not that we couldn't have gotten them, not that we couldn't have built that program, but it was with all of the grants that were coming about, we saw the opportunity to provide opportunities for our members faster. And that's one of the big questions we've been asked by our members for a few years now is, you're my electric provider. How can you and what are you going to do? They really weren't asking what, how. It's like, what are you going to do as my electrical provider to get broadband to me? Because the big guys don't want to do it. They have no interest. So what are you going to do about it?
Right. Common problem. And so as we, I know from being in this industry over 15 years and talking to a lot of rural operators of utilities, funding their own fiber networks for their own communities, adding a utility, but also, like you just said, it's cost prohibitive in some ways for the larger carriers to come into the smaller areas. But what's interesting to me, and I read a couple articles on this in the last couple of years talking about people moving away from the larger metro areas, seeking out more peaceful communities, higher quality of life, connected communities, yes, walkable communities, things like that. And but they have to have high-speed internet, and you can't own a business today in this modern age, especially after the last 3 years, without being connected to a high-speed internet.
Right. And I actually did the same thing myself. I moved out of a more metropolitan type of area, very densely populated. Fredericksburg is about halfway between Washington, D.C. and Richmond.
Okay.
So the growth has just expanded from Northern Virginia to Richmond to Fredericksburg has become what a bedroom community. We have some other areas like that as well. I was born and raised there, stayed there for 55 years. And decided, you know, it's time to go somewhere a little slower. So I actually did move into a much more rural community. Fortunately, the piece of property that we chose, and I didn't even think to check into this first, but most people do. Fortunately, it had broadband available at that time. The street right behind me did not.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I was very fortunate in that. But now I live on a lake, in a lake community. It's a much slower pace of life. I appreciate that very much. And, yes, we're hearing that a lot from our membership is, you know, they're finding folks that's one of the first questions they ask when they go looking for a home, mm-hmm, or somewhere new to move, especially when they're moving from somewhere that they have pretty much everything right around the corner that they're used to having when they are looking to move more into the rural areas is there high-speed internet at that home? And if they're told no, then, okay, show me something else. I'm not interested.
That's great. That's great. I think since we've had to go more remote with all of our technologies in the last 3 years, it's clear that folks are looking for that. I don't want to say slower pace, but maybe close-knit community, higher quality of life, more peaceful, things like that, like you said. I'm curious. I know you. I know with your open access, you're growing like crazy, as you mentioned. There's plenty of work for you to do. How many counties right now are you trying to connect in Virginia?
Between the two ISPs, 13 of our 22 counties that we serve in Virginia.
Wow, wow, those are big plans.
They are big plans. You know, Rappahannock Electric covers 22 counties of Virginia. We have over 170,000 members, over 17,000 miles of line that we maintain. And we're using that infrastructure to be able to build these networks on, because we already have the poles, we already have the structures there, so it makes sense to utilize those for broadband as well.
That's great. That's great. And I know there's you have a current project that I read about with partner Firefly and also All Points Broadband,
yes,
APB.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that partnership and the role of each one of those?
Yes. With Firefly, we'll start with that one. We're building a fiber network that they're going to be using to provide services in five of the counties that we're serve for electrically. One of the counties will be completely served by Firefly. They're a rural county, and they have basically no broadband, no internet service other than satellite, maybe some DSL in some areas, or cellular. And those are, you know, very low speed, and so that they're actually a partner to be able to do that. It's a sister co-op that's one of our bordering neighbor cooperatives. So it made good sense for us to partner with them to be able to expand, because they were looking to expand their broadband Firefly service into other areas beyond themselves. So it made really good sense that since we bordered each other, we're both cooperatives, electric cooperatives, to be able to expand that into our service territory. So we're covering five counties with them, building all of that fiber in our electrical space. For All Points Broadband, APB, what we're doing is our backbone middle mile that we're building for our own utility network, we're overbuilding that in fiber count to be able to lease dark fiber services, and All Points Broadband is going to take advantage of that to build in seven or eight counties that we're looking into expanding broadband services into. So, and then they will build the last mile themselves.
Fabulous. Wow. It's a lot of work.
It is. A lot of quite a few thousand miles of fiber being built for just those two projects. Mm-hmm. And then there's others that have some interest as far as even wireless carriers, wireless small independent broadband services that are looking to utilize our fiber to get out into the rural areas, because that's one of the biggest issues that these ISPs have, is they want to get out there and serve. They want to get that fiber out there or a wireless service out there, but their issue is, how do I get there? Because in many cases, there was no pathway there, even
right.
with the larger carriers. They weren't in that area. So now that we're building this utility network for ourselves, covering all of these counties and the many miles of fiber, it gives them an opportunity to get out there into those rural areas and provide that last mile of service.
That's fabulous. So in essence, you're stepping in for those larger carriers that not interested, but
right.
you're providing that open access network
yes.
for all those ISPs.
Yes.
Great. So I am curious, on another note, since you've been here this week, what are some of the most surprising things you've seen with this conference? Any topics that came up that you didn't think you would see here?
I think probably some of the most surprising things is one that you already mentioned, and actually on a previous conversation that I was having with another gentleman before this, is the small amount of education that these ISPs and others have in what it takes to build these fiber networks.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a bit of work that needs to be done ahead of time, and that that's something that we need to educate them on, is the amount of work that that's needed to be done overhead, underground, you know, pole replacements, getting everything prepared.
Right.
So I see that a lot with different ones, and even hearing that in some of the sessions of trying to get prepared, get planned, and get a good plan together, instead of just, okay, we're going to do this and hope for the best. That doesn't work well. So I think that's something that I see a lot, is trying to help them understand what it actually takes to be able to just go out and put the fiber up. You know, it'd be wonderful if you could just go out and, you know, hang it on the pole and we're good to go, but
right.
it's not quite that simple.
Right. That's a great point. I think you don't know what you don't know. An electric network, although a network like a broadband network, has a lot of different pieces to it and details
right.
to it. And so education is paramount, what you're saying. So how large is your team?
I have a team of eight right now.
Okay.
We have a person who is very experienced with splicing. We have another who is a lineman still, but he's on our team now. He's actually able to help with a lot of the construction. I have a designer. I have someone who takes care of all of the work orders and the invoicing, which is a lot in itself. And then there's three others that are solely dedicated to these two projects from the side of all the construction. They oversee all of the crews, whether it be our in-house crews or contract crews. They review all the design ahead of time. Once it gets to them, they'll actually go out into the field, look at the design, look at the poles, and then they can actually help make wise choices of, does this work need to really be done or not? Because a lot of designers design from their seat with Google.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that, mm-hmm. but you really need someone to be able to focus on that and be dedicated to this, to be able to go out in the field and see, take that design and say, yes, this needs to be done, I agree, or no, there's a better way that we can do this, or maybe we don't really need to do that at all.
Right. That's a great point. As far as design programs, we see a lot of automation and AI and using data to maybe shorten that design process, but you can't take the human out of that process entirely.
No, you can't.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Well, before we wrap this up today, and I appreciate you coming to talk with us, it's great to meet you.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to get in touch with you or you're with REC, where can they go for that?
Sure. My information is actually on our website at myrec.coop.
Okay.
I can certainly provide that as well. Anyone wants to email me, my email is mponton@myrec.coop. You're welcome to email me, contact me. Be glad to talk with you about anything that you may have, any interest you may have, some of the experiences, the challenges, the things that we didn't do so well, you know, that we're trying to connect and collect, you know, correct as we move along. And maybe someone's just out there with an idea. It's like, you know, we want to get into this, and I'd be glad to talk with anyone that may be trying to think about it or might be far into it. In between the two of us, we may be able to help each other. So I'm always open and welcome anyone to whom I can help.
Great. Well, from me, Brad Hine, and Mark Ponton, thank you for joining us today. And I love hearing that you're a big participant of this UTC community and building that community with education and knowledge and willing to share. And I invite you next time to come chat with us too at the, I think next year we're in Mobile.
Yes.
Yeah, so please don't be a stranger.
Okay.
And you take care. Bye-bye.